All right, we're going to start here on the bottom of Pei Ched Amud Bet by the Mishnah. The Mishnah begins, V'neder almano grusha yakum aleha. So within the Parsha of Nedarim, we have different categories. We have a Nara who is governed by her father. We have a woman who is married that is governed by her husband. We have an area where it's shared between the father and the husband. And then we have a woman who is on her own. And that is a neder almana ugrusha, a woman who is widowed or divorced. And now her nidarim are going to take effect because there's no one there who has auspices over her. Her husband's not there and her father is not there. Ketzad, what's the case here? So now whether the Gemara thinks that literally this is what the case is in the Chumash, because otherwise the pasuk is unnecessary. It's clear that an almana and a grusha have nobody to be made for their neder, and of course her neder is kayam. Or is the Gemara just using this as a header? This is the category, and when there's a category, there's a chidush, but not that this is the literal interpretation of the pasuk. The Ran suggests that this is the interpretation of the pasuk, otherwise the pasuk is unnecessary. But you could learn that the pasuk is just bringing us the category, and then within the category here, the Mishnah is telling us a chidush, something that would be an extension of that which is true by an almana grusha. Amra, areini nizira lachar 30 yom. She said, I will become a nizira after 30 days. Afal bi shiniseit b'toch lamed yom. Even though she gets married within that 30-day period, eno yachol lehafer. You can't be mefer that neder. So this, according to the Ran and those that think this is the interpretation of the pasuk, this is the chidush, which is that the amira, the ma'aseh ha-neder, governs when the neder is up for hafara. And since that took place prior to her nisuin, then when she gets married, she can't have a hafara by her husband, because that's what we call kodmin, something that pre-existed the marriage. And since it pre-existed the marriage, he doesn't have any rights to be made for it, even though the neder only goes into effect once they're married, because it was after 30 days. And she got married in the interim. And so then you would have thought possibly that the husband has a right of hafara. The answer is no, that he doesn't have a right of hafara, because we go after the zmana mira, the zmana maseha neder, and not after the chaluta neder, not when the neder goes effective. And the same is true the other way around. Nadra, v'hi b'shuta ba'al. She takes the neder while she's under the auspices of her husband. Meferla, he can nullify it. Ketzad, what is the scenario? Amra, hareni nizira achar lamid yom. She says, I will be a nizira after 30 days. Afal pi shenit almana, o nit garsha, even though she is widowed or divorced, betoch lamid, within that 30-day period, harize mufar, if the husband exercised his right to be made for the neder, then the hafara goes through. So you see here both the chumra and the kula. We go after the amira, we go after the maaseh neder, when the neder is taken. Not after the chaluta neder, not when the neder goes effective. So in both of these cases, that has impact. In the case where she took the neder prior to the marriage, even though it goes effective during the marriage, he doesn't have a right to hafara, because the neder was taken prior to their marriage. On the other hand, in the case where the neder is taken in their marriage, it only goes effective after their marriage, he does have right of hafara because the neder is taken during their marriage. Nadra bo bayom, v'nit garsha bo bayom. She took a neder that day, and then she was divorced on that day. Hechzira bo bayom, and then he remarries her on that day. Eino yachol lehafer. He does not have a right of hafara. Ze haklal. The principle is, kol sheyatza lerushut atzma sha'achat. Anybody who was on their own for a moment in time, eno yachol hafer. The husband no longer has rights of hafara. So the case here, according to the Ran, you can see this, is nadra bo bayom, b'yom shenisait, on the day that she got married. Meaning that she got married on that day itself, and she took the neder that morning when she got married. Then they got divorced. Then they got remarried. And when they get remarried, now the husband is dealing with the neder during the period of time of the second marriage. V'chi tani, and this is what the Ran says the Chiddush is here, nadra bo bayom l'rabuta nakte. The Chiddush is here is that on that day itself, da'af agav bo bayom haitai b'rishut avia kodem shenadra. So even though earlier in that day she was under her father's auspices, which would allow the husband a right of hafara, because we know that a husband has no right to be mefer bekodmin, but along with the father, he does have a right of kodmin because they don't become kodmin anymore. So as long as they are in the status of erusin, and she is an arusa, then the husband has a right to be made for the neder along with the father, because the father carries through the neder into the period of erusin. So jointly with the father, he can be made for the neder. Once they reach the point of nisuin, there's no longer the ability to be made for the neder. So in the case where she got married originally by nisuin, and then they got divorced, and she remarries by erusin, so you would think that maybe in that scenario he should be able to be made for the neder because he's now an arus and arusa with her. The father still had auspices in the beginning of the day. Maybe he should be able to make for the nether. The answer is not, because right, the father gets severed. His relationship is severed at the moment of nisuin. And since the father's relationship is severed, then once she goes into her own reconnaissance, there's no way that he has the ability now to be made for the bikodmin. And that's why the husband has no rights of hafara over here, because there's no way that he can go back in time and be made for a nether that took place prior to his having auspices over the woman, which is now in the second marriage. It does not count the first marriage. So even though it all happened on the same day, it doesn't have any impact, the fact that it's the same day because of this in-between stage where there was a severing of the relationship. So whether she took the nether prior to the first marriage, or whether she took the nether during the first marriage, but in both those scenarios, he will no longer have the ability to be made for the nether, because those are both kodmin now. He got married, he reached the point of nisuin, so whatever was taken before the nisuin, he no longer has rights to. And that was taken during the marriage, he divorced her, and therefore, there's no longer any right of hafara, because now when he remarries her, that's also again kodmin. The Hava Mina, the Ran says, is maybe when she got married the second time was erusin only, and maybe that erusin will connect back to the father's status prior at the beginning of the day, and maybe she'll be able to make for neder. The Rosh, on the other hand, says that the Chiddush here is that the scenario is Nadra Bo Bayom, Be'akzira Bo Bayom, Va'achar Kach Shamat Nidra, that he only hears about the neder during the second marriage. Eino Yochol Afer, Kevin Shiatzal Rishut Atzma, Ben Nidra LaHafara. Since she was on her own reconnaissance between the time that she took the nether and the hafara, Dena Baal Mefer Bekodmim. So the way that the Rosh explains the Chiddush is that the nether was taking place during the first marriage, but he only becomes aware of it in the second marriage. So his awareness in the second marriage, maybe you would think that grants him the right of hafara. The answer is no, because there's a separation between the time of the nether and the hafara, where she was independent. And that severs the Baal's ability to be made fair such a neder. That's the way that the Rosh explains the Chiddush. Then the Rosh goes on to say, Miu, b'denokat nadra bo bayom, mashma da'airi be'arusa. Says, it sounds like the fact that she took the neder on that day, sounds like we're talking about an arusa. Ve'ena av, va'arus mefirin. The av and the arus cannot be made for here. I gerushin kahakama damu. If gerushin are the equivalent of being making the neder. So what the Rosh says is that there's another alternative to explain this Mishnah, to explain the case, and he thinks that the language lends itself this way, which is, she didn't get married fully on that day, she was an arusa on that day. He got engaged halachically to this woman in the morning, and then at that point in time, he and the father have a right to be mefer the nedarim, because now they are jointly partners, have auspices over the woman, and they could be mefer the nedarim. Then he divorces her. Once he divorces her from the Erusin, we learned earlier in the Masech that was Machloket as to whether Gerushin is the equivalent of Hakama, or is Gerushin like nothing, and then we can continue later on. If you believe that Gerushin is Hakama, that it's as if there was Hakamata Neder, then we're done, because through the Gerushin he was making the Neder, and that severs the ability of the husband or the father to be made for the Neder anymore. And then when they get married again, when she gets married again, there's no longer an ability to deal with that nether because there was already a hakamat ha-nether. So that's a possibility. But if you believe, he says, gerushin, lav ka-hakamat dami, muka lalel binasa, then that mandamer believes that what happened in the beginning here was nisuin. So if it's ha-hakamat dami, then the first scenario could be a case where she only had erusin. And despite the fact that it was only erusin, once she gets divorced, the divorce is an effective hakama, affirmation of the neder, and therefore there's nothing to talk about after that point in time. So So whether he has Erusin after that or Nisuin after that, it's not going to matter because the Gerushin already created a Hakama to that Neder. On the other hand, if you believe that the Gerushin have no impact in terms of Hakama and Hafara, then you would have to say that the first scenario, she was married by Nisuin. And that's what severed the relationship. That Nisuin and the divorce, the subsequent divorce, severs everyone's relationship. The husband because of the Gerushin, the father because of the Nisuin, and that's why everybody's out of the picture. Because if you believe that the Gerushin did nothing, then the case where he was in Arus, and they got halakhically engaged, and then they got divorced, at that point it would revert back to the father, and then if he had Erusin again that day, he would be able to be made for the Neder, because she never left the auspices of the father. If the Gerushin is not Kehakama Domi, and therefore you would be able to be Mefer. So that's why you have to explain the case then as a Nisua case. Right now the Gemara says, Tanya, Almano Ugrusha Shamra, Hereni Nizira, Likeshe Enase. I will become a Nizira once I get married, Viniseit. And sure enough, she gets married. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yafer. Rabbi Shmuel says you can be made for the Neder. The husband has a right of Hafara, because the Neder only goes effective after they were married. Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo yafer. Rabbi Kiva says you cannot do hafara because the neder was taken prior to the marriage. So what you essentially see is Rabbi Kiva believes you go after amirat haneder, you go after the maaseh haneder. Rabbi Shmuel says you go after the chalut haneder, you go after the effectiveness of the neder. Therefore, in this scenario where the neder was taken prior to the marriage but only goes effective after the marriage, Rabbi Kiva says no hafara. Rabbi Yishmael says, yes, hafara. Right, the simana yalali, that's just the siman for the order of their opinions. In the ratio of the braita, it says yafer, and then lo yafer, because Rabbi Yishmael says yafer, and then Rabbi Kiva. And the second part of the braita, it says lo yafer, yafer, because Rabbi Yishmael's position is going to be reversed, and so does Rabbi Akiva's. So this is just giving you, the yalali is giving you the order of their statements. Rabbi Shmuel goes first, then Rabbi Akiva. And now we know what their opinions are in the ratio and the Seifa. Yafer, lo yafer, lo yafer, yafer. Which is the Seifa is now. Eshet ish, shamra, hareini nizira, l'she'et garesh. So he says that I will be a nizira when I am divorced. V'nit garsha. And sure enough, she gets divorced. Rabbi Shmuel omer, lo yafer. Here Rabbi Shmuel says, no hafara. Because Rabbi Shmuel says it goes after the effectiveness of the neder. The neder only went effective post the marriage. Therefore, the husband has no right of hafara, and he can't be made for the neder. On the other hand, Rabbi Kiva Omer, yafer. He has the right of hafara because we go batar amirat neder. We go after the maaseh neder. When the neder was taken, that's what deems, in the time period in which it is assumed to have taken place. And therefore here, it was during the marriage that it was taken. Therefore, he has the right of hafara. Amar Rabbi Yishmael, Harei hu Omer, the neder almana grusha v'chulei, ad shehei neder b'shat almanut v'gerushin. So Rabbi Shmuel explains his position, which is that the neder has to go into effect when she is an almana grusha. If that's the case, then nobody has auspices, and the neder goes effective immediately. On the other hand, if it goes effective when she's not an almana grusha, then she'll be under the auspices of the husband. Rabbi Kiva Savar, Hari Omer, the Pasuk says, Kol Asher Asra Al Nafsha, says anything that she is oser on herself, Ad She Yisrei Neder Bishat Amanut V'Gerushin. There has to be a case where the Yisrei Neder, at the moment that she creates the Yisur, that's when she has to be an Amanah Grusha, in order for the Neder to be effective, and she's under her own auspices. Otherwise, if she articulates the Yisurim, has the amira while she's married, then the neder is subject to the hafara of the baal, because the isur was created not while she was an amana ugrusha. It was created when she was under the auspices of the husband. So that's the difference of the opinion here between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva as to what has to take place while she's an amana ugrusha. Is it the neder, the effectiveness of the neder, or is it the isur, the generation of the neder has to take place in that point? And that's what Rabbi Akiva says, amira is the determining factor, the articulation, the generation of the neder. As Rabbi Shmuel says, it's the effectiveness of the neder, which is important, and they focus on different aspects, whether it's focused on the word neder or on the word isur. Now, Amar Rav Chista, like you asked, Matnitan, Rabbi Akiva, Our Mishnah is obviously authored by Rabbi Kiva, because in our Mishnah, in both cases, we went Batar Amira, and not Batar Chalut HaNeder, not after the effectiveness of the Neder. Abay Amar, Afilu Teima Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Ishmael can fit into our Mishnah. How is that? Matnitin Talya Nafsha B'Yomei. In the Mishnah, the trigger for the Neder was days. Brayta Talya Nafsha B'Nisuin. On the other hand, by the case of the Brayta, she connected it to her marriage. Shalmu Yome Velonit Garsha. Shalmu Yome Velonit Nasba. So there's a possibility that she will complete the days without getting married, or complete the days without getting divorced. So now there are two ways to explain this. The Mifaresh, the Rashi over here, explains this. Achachi Kamar. Ine Yochol Afer, he can't do Afera. Delekala Meimar. The reason that the husband has a right of hafara is because in general, when the woman takes a neder, partly embedded in that neder is her husband's approval of the neder. And so when she takes the neder, there is an opening or a grant to the husband, or basically a right of refusal, a veto right over the neder. But that's only true when the woman takes the neder in such a manner that nisuin are on the horizon. In the case where she ties it to 30 days, there's no saying that she will get married during that 30-day period. Could be she'll get married, could be not get married. The 30 days could expire, elapse, and there could be no marriage there whatsoever. So that means when she took the neder, she did not have in mind the possibility that she would get married or leave open this veto right inside of the neder, because she had no idea that she would get married. On the other hand, when she specifically ties the neder to the nisuin, then in that case she knows that the neder will only go effective when she's married. Well, if she knows the neder will only go effective when she's married, she basically leaves open the right of refusal, the veto right to the husband, because she knows that the neder will only become effective then. Rabbi Shmuel is saying, listen, when you take a neder and the amira and the chalut are separated, then I agree with you that we'll go after the amira. We go after the time that the neder was put into effect when you generated the neder. And I agree with you, Rabbi Akiva. But in an instance where the effectiveness of the neder is tied to the marriage specifically, that's when I believe that you have to go after the chaluta neder. You go after the effectiveness of the neder, because it's clear when she took the neder, she knew it would only be effective after the marriage was in place. And if that's the case, she grants the husband that veto right or right of refusal. And the other way around, if while she's married, she's taking the neder, if she says 30 days, then there's no saying she's going to get divorced during that 30-day period. So then, ala stam, she grants the right of hafara to her husband. On the other hand, where she specifically ties it to divorce, and she says that it will go effective once I'm divorced, she's clearly taking the husband's right out of the picture. She's refusing to grant him the right of refusal or veto, because she only wants to go effective after the marriage, which means that she really doesn't want to take it al dat bala, because it's only going to go effective after she's already divorced. So that's how the Mifaresh explains what happened over here. The difference between our Mishnah and the Braita is that the Mishnah just uses days, where there's a possibility that no nisuin or no gerushin will ever take place. And there he agrees with Rabbi Kiva that goes after Amira. On the other hand, in the case where she specifically ties it to the Nisuin or the Geirushin, in that instance, it's clear that she has something in mind vis-a-vis the Baal. Either she wants to include him in the Neder and give him the right refusal, or she wants to exclude him from the Neder. And that is evidenced by the fact that she wants it to go effective either when she's married or after she's divorced. So that's how he explains the difference. On the other hand, the Rosh says it in a more succinct way. The Ran expands on this and explains that Chi Azil Rabbi Shmuel Batar Chaluta Neder. When does Rabbi Shmuel say that we go after the effectiveness of the Neder? Hanimile Kintalya Nafsha Minisuin Obey Gerushin. That's only when she ties it specifically to divorce or marriage. Hilkach Kevin Sheiv Shale Amirat Haneder B'Chaluta Neder Sheiv B'Shut Echad. By definition, then there is no way that she can have the Amira and the chalut and neder take place under the same auspices. Because the fact that she tied it to nisuin means that by definition the amira is prior to nisuin, and the chalut, the effectiveness of the neder, is after nisuin. Or the other way around. If she took the amira, she took the neder while she was married, she ties it to divorce, then by definition she'll be under a different auspice when the neder goes effective. So in that scenario, Rabbi Shmuel says, where it's clear that the Amira and the Chaluta Neder are going to be under different auspices, then the Chaluta Neder governs. The effectiveness of the Neder governs. On the other hand, where there's a possibility, and seemingly when she takes the Neder, that is what it's going to be, that it's under one auspice, which means she takes the Neder and says, in 30 days it's going to go effective. So she's not married at the time, and the 30 days when she took the Neder could have equally be in a situation where she did not get married. And that means that the Amira and the Chaluta Neder are under the same auspice, under her control. And therefore, the Neder then is determined, or the date of the Neder is determined by the Amira when she put it into effect. And the same is true in the reverse. If she took the Neder while she's married and she has a 30-day expiry, she didn't expect not to be married during that 30-day period. Therefore, she believed she would be under the auspices of the husband that entire period. And since she would be under the auspices of the husband, the Amira becomes the most important factor. And so that's why in the Mishnah, we go after the Amira, because over there, we would have assumed that she's not changing positions. We assume she's still in the same state of the Amira and the Chaluta Neder, and therefore the Amira governs. In the case of the Braita, where it's clear that the Amira and the Chaluta Neder are going to be separated, then the Chaluta Neder governs. So that's the way the Ran explains the difference between our Mishnah and Rabbi Shmuel's position here in the Braita. Well, in halacha, we pass on like Rabbi Akiva, because we have the principle, halacha, Rabbi Akiva, mechavero, and here it's machloket, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Shmuel, and therefore the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, that we go, batar amira, no matter what the case is. Now the Gemara says, zaklau, this is the latter half of the Mishnah, tiktani gabe naram rasa, that it's written by the naram rasa, so we have the zaklau that is written in perek naram rasa, and then we have zaklau that's written in our Mishnah. Question is, why do you have these two zaklaus? And the derech of the Bavli, the Gemara Bavli, is anytime the Mishnah says zaklau, that has to teach you an additional chiddush. It's not just a summary. It's not just giving you a principle. But a zaklau means that I have to include something else. There's something else that the Mishnah is after to include through that zaklau. So that's what the Gemara says here. The zaklau, tani gabi naramurasa, that was written in the previous perek by perek naramurasa, letuye, comes to include a case like this. Halacha av im shluchei abal, if the father accompanies the messengers, the proxies of the husband, o shalchu shluchei av im shluchei abal, or the messengers or proxies of the father accompany the shluchei abal bin nara hamurasa, in a case where she is engaged halachically, davia ubala mefirin nidareha. In that case, both the father and the husband jointly are mefir the nidareim. Or, in essence, the father has yet to relinquish control over his daughter. That's what we're trying to determine here, is where is the point where the father no longer has rights, and now he's relinquished those rights to the husband. There's a crossover point. So, what the case in Aram Arasa says, that as long as the father is still in the picture, he hasn't relinquished that right. He can remain in the picture, either he meets up with the proxies, the messengers of the Baal, and even though now he turns over his daughter to them, but since he stays with them, that is not considered to be an official severing of their relationship, and he maintains his relationship with the daughter until they obviously reach the husband, until the point of Nisuin. If he sent messengers on his behalf, and then they meet up with the messengers of the Baal, if his messengers continue to accompany the messengers of the Baal, once again, his proxies make it that he has not relinquished control. And therefore, the right of Hafara still exists. Zakal, dekani gabi velu nidarim. The Zakal is written in R perek. Leatuye, that comes to include a case. Masar av, mishulchei abal. Where the father gives it over to the messenger of the Baal and does not accompany him. He turns his back and heads home. O shemasur shulchei av, mishulchei abal. Or the proxies, messengers of a father, give it over to the messengers of the Baal and again, turn away. Then the father now has relinquished rights because he's out of the picture. He's severed his relationship with the daughter when he turns his back and gives it over to the husband. The husband now does not have a right of hafara because the husband can't be mefer bekodmim. The only way he can be mefer bekodmim is together with the father. But now that the father's out of the picture, the husband has no right to be mefer nidareim that took place prior to that point in time. Now, the Ran explains it this way, and Chil, this goes to your question, which is the Ran says, at the moment that he gives it over to the Baal or the Shluchei Baal, Davila hach misiraki nisuin. That granting of the woman over to the shluchei abal, where the shluchei av giving over the shluchei abal, that is the moment where she transitions from being an arusa to being a nisua. The Ran says that at that moment of transition, nisuin happened. Since nisuin happened, the governing factor for nidarim is erusin and nisuin. So when she's an arusa, the father has rights, and so does the husband together with him. Once she's in Isua, the father's out of the picture, the husband has the full rights. And basically what the Ran says is, at that moment that the father gives it to the Shluchei Abal, and he doesn't accompany them, that generates the point of Nisuin. Despite the fact that there's no Chupa yet. The Chupa will only take place when she reaches the Baal and he takes her into his house. So it's not reliant on Chupa. And since it's not reliant on Chupa, now we have Nisuin. Nisuin is a sufficient grounds to change the auspices here from that of the father over onto the Baal alone, and therefore he can't be made for Bikodmim. That's the way that the Ran explains it. There are those that believe that you can only have Hafarat Nisuin by the time of Chupa. So then what you actually will have at this point in time is a no man's land, an area where she's under nobody's auspices, which is at the point that the father gives up to the Shluchei Abal. At that moment, he's severed his relationship in terms of the Erusin because he's given her over and now he walks away. He's out of the picture. On the other hand, the husband only gets the right to be made for the Nedarim once there's Chupa. So in the interim period, there's this stage where there might be Nisuin, but there's no Chupa. So the father's out of the picture. The husband's yet to come into the picture. If she takes a Neder during that period of time, nobody can be made for it. Not the father, because he's already out of the picture. Not the husband, because he doesn't have chupa, he doesn't have auspices over her yet. And that would be this gray area, this no man's land, where nobody has auspices over her. On the other hand, there are those that believe that the father's rights remain in place until the chupa. You can see this in the Balei HaTosafot, which is, he takes a neder, vigirsha. Then the husband divorces her, vechzira. And then he takes her back. Dein baal mefer. The baal has no rights of hafara. Tietza kvar mishuta av. Because she already left the auspices of the father. Kevin shemasra l'shluchei abal. Harehu ki ilu nichtasa l'chupa. It's as if there was chupa that took place at that moment. Once she goes into the shluchei abal, it's as if she's come into the quote-unquote possession of the baal. And chupa is effective at that moment. So since chupa is effective at that moment, we sever the father's relationship. And everywhere the husband divorces her at that point, she doesn't go back to the father, by which then, if they got married again, they would jointly be made for the nidarim. She goes independent at that point. So, again, we have these different opinions as to whether it's generated by nisuin, is it generated by chupa, and then where does nisuin and chupa happen? Does nisuin happen at the transition point, chupa later? Or is the transition point generate chupa as well? And obviously that has nafkaminot in that interim stage between the time that the Shluchei Abal have her until she reaches the house of the Baal. What's her status? Is her status already that she's a nisua, and therefore the husband has rights of hafara because nisuin governs? Or is she in no man's land because chupa governs and she doesn't have chupa yet? Or is she out of the auspices of the Baal because this generates chupa, and chupa already happened at that moment, and you've severed the father's relationship at that point in time. And then the Tosafot gives this complex case, which Rashi also seems to give in other places in Shas, which is this idea that the husband divorced her and then remarried her, seemingly as a continuation of our Mishnah. The similar case that was written right before the Zaklal in the Mishnah was a case where he married her, divorced her, and remarried her. So the similar case here to explain this phenomenon of the father being disconnected or being relieved of his control, and the husband not yet taking over control, or taking over control, but he can't affect the Nedarim because they took place prior to his taking that control. All right, now, next Mishnah. Teisha ne'arot nidrehen kayamim. There are 9 young ladies that when they take the Neder, they're automatically effective because there's nobody there who can be made for the Neder, or her status has now removed her from the auspices of any party. The truth is that there are really only 3 cases over here. The Mishnah takes 3 cases and expands them into 9. Because of that, there's huge overlap between the cases. Some of the cases are almost identical because what the Mishnah is doing is bringing you every manifestation of that case. The three cases of where a woman is under her own auspices. Number one are Yutoma b'chayeyav. It's a case where she becomes an orphan while her father is still alive. That happens when her father has married her off and something happens to that marriage that terminates that marriage, whether it's divorce or being widowed. In either case, she's now what's called the Yutoma b'chayeyav. She no longer is under her father's auspices because her father married her off. She's no longer under her husband's auspices because the husband doesn't exist anymore. And therefore she's called the Yutoma b'chayeyav, which is a halachic category of a woman who's no longer under her father's auspices, but also is not married at that time. That's one case. The next case is Yutoma mamash, where she does not have a father. She really is an orphan. She doesn't have a father, then there's nobody to be made for her nidarim, assuming that she's not married. And therefore, whenever she takes a neder, it would go effective. The last case is bogeret, when she already graduates to the age of a bogeret, where she's on her own again. There, too, being a bogeret is sufficient reason for her nidarim to be effective, even though her father's alive, or even though possibly she's going to get married. Nevertheless, being a bogeret gives her that independence. So in these three scenarios, the woman's nidarim are tofes. They go into effect. Again, the Mishnah is going to give us 9 instances of where this happens, but each 3 set are focused on one of those. The first 3 set will be focused on Yitumah B'chayav. The next 3 will focus on Yitumah Mamash. And the last 3 will be focused on a bogeret. Now, why there are 9, the Yerushalmi, the Ran quotes of here, says the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, and he just did it the Chadedet HaTalmidim. Not that he disagrees. We're going to see the Chachamim say there are only 3, which are the 3 that we just mentioned, and Rabbi Yehuda brings 9. Not that he fundamentally disagrees with the Chachamim, just the Yerushalmi says the Chadedet HaTalmidim, he wanted them to come up with all the scenarios. And so therefore, we have all the scenarios in this Mishnah. So here we go. First one is Bogeret V'i Yitoma. Case where she's a bogeret, but she's also a yitoma. Now here, both by themselves would be reasons for her to have her neder go effective. Whether she's a bogeret, she's independent. But here the focus is on yitoma. Yitoma is as distinct from meit aviha. Yitoma is that halakhic category of someone's yitoma b'chayeyav. As opposed to meit aviha, where her father died, that's a true orphan. That's a true yitoma. So when the Mishnah uses the term Yitoma, it means Bechayav. When the Mishnah uses Metavia, that means literally an orphan. So the first 3 cases are all we're going to involve the He Yitoma, that she is a Yitoma. Should note that the Tosafot conflates the two and says Yitoma and Metavia are the same thing. They both mean that she is orphaned. The difference is when the nether was taken. Was the neder taken while she was a yitoma? Or was the neder taken and then the father died and made her into yitoma? So they say effectively there are only 2 cases in the Mishnah. 2 cases in the Mishnah is either she's an orphan, a real orphan, or she's a bogeret. They don't have the case of yitoma b'chayeav. Right, so now, the first case is bogeret v'yitoma. Ne'ara, she was a ne'ara. Ubagra, and then she became of age. V'hi yitoma, and again, she's a yitoma b'chayeav. So the first case is she takes the neder when she's a bogeret. But she's already on her own reconnaissance because she was previously married. The next case is where she takes the nether when she's in Ne'ara, Ubagra. And then she came to an age where she's independent, Ve'yitoma. But again, she is also independent because she had already been married off. And she's Yitoma Bechayeyav. So in both these cases, whether the nether was taken while she was a Bogeret or was taken while she was in Ne'ara. But in both those cases, nobody has auspices over her because she's Yitoma Bechayeyav. And therefore, her father does not have rights to mefer her neder. And the third case is Nara Shelo Bagra. She's a Nara, and she has yet to become a Bugeret, but he Yitoma. But she's Yitoma b'chayav, and therefore the father has no auspices over her because he already married her off. Something happened to terminate that marriage. Even though she's still a Nara, the father has no rights. Now, truthfully, it could happen even when she was a Ketana. Doesn't have to be just when she's in Ara, it could happen when she's a Ketana. The only difference being that a neder of a Ketana doesn't take effect. A Ketana can't take a neder that will be effective because she's not considered to be a Mufla'a. Now it could be that she's a Mufla'a Samuch, the Isha, so at the age of 11 possibly it could take effect and then Ketana might be relevant. But that's why the Mishnah focused on Ne'ara and not on Ketana. Now, the next series of three. So the first series of three, the reason why in each of those cases they can't be made for the neder is because she is a yitoma b'chayav. The second case is because she literally is a yitoma in all of these cases. Bugeret umeit avia. She was already of age, and her father passed away. Nobody can be made for a nidareem, both because she's a bugeret, as well as the fact that her father already passed away. Ne'ara bugeret umeit avia. She took the neder when she was a ne'ara, then she aged out and became a bugeret, and her father passed away. Again, nobody can be made for the neder, both because she's a bugeret, as well as the fact that she meit avia, that her father passed away. Ne'ara shelo bagra, case where she is a ne'ara and has yet to reach the age of bugeret, so she's still technically under the auspices of the father, but meit avia, her father has passed away. Therefore, there's nobody to be made fair the nidarim. So now, in the first six cases, the chiddush is really only in the case where she's a ne'ara. When she's a ne'ara and she's a tumah b'chayav, or she's a ne'ara and her father passed away, in both those cases, there's nobody to be made fair the nether, and that's the big chiddush. Because in the other case, she's already a bogeret, and bogeret by itself is sufficient reason for the person not to be able to be made for the nether. The last series of three is bogeret. Nara, shemeit avia, and Nara, whose father passed away, she's orphaned, umeshemeit avia bagra. After her father already passed away, then she graduated to be independent. Bogeret, she's a bogeret, vavia kayam, that's the big chiddush in this piece. She's a bogeret, and her father is still alive. She's still under her own auspices because she is a bogeret. Ne'ara, bogeret. She was a ne'ara when she took the neder. Bogeret. Then she became a bogeret. Ve'avia kayam. And her father's alive. Once again over there, she's independent because she's now at the age of bogeret. So her father being alive has no impact. There is no chiddush. That's the point. V'chadeit et ha'talmidim. That you can come up with all these different cases where it's true. Again, there are only three things that matter. The three cases that matter are Ne'ara, where she's a Yitoma, Ne'ara, b'meit avia, and the case of Bogeret, v'avia kayam. Those are the three cases where it matters, and each one of those cases, the reason is that case. It is either because she's a Yitoma b'chayav, she's a real Yitoma, or she's a Bogeret, and that's what gives her independence. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af amasi bito aktana, also, someone who marries off his daughter who's a minor, and then she is widowed, onid garsha, or divorced, v'chazra etzlo, adayin hi ne'ara. She returns to her father, she is still considered to be a ne'ara. So now, it's not clear what Rabbi Yehuda says of this. Even though she's still a ne'ara at that point in time, it seems what Rabbi Yehuda is suggesting is that she does not go back under the auspices of her father. And all Rabbi Yehuda is doing is adding on an additional case where she does not go back to her father, her case where she's independent, adding in the word ktana. And that's what the Ran explains over here. V'adayini narash minan dafilu hayta ktana kishini seit, yatsa mirshut avia, v'anu nisuin, v'chi ktani adayini hi nara, hu adin nami afili ktana. Doesn't matter if she's a nara or a ktana at that point in time. So what Rabbi Yehuda is doing is adding an additional case. In a sense, a fourth case where the woman will go independent. Where she's not a Nara, not a Bugeret, but she still becomes independent when she was a Ketana that was married off. And then the marriage was terminated for whatever reason. She goes independent, even if she's still a Ketana, or even when she's a Nara. So Rabbi Yehuda is adding on that additional case. That's one way to read Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is mosif al the Tanakama. He's not arguing on the Tanakama. He's just adding this case. And the Tanakama wouldn't necessarily disagree with Rabbi Yehuda's position. On the other hand, there are those Rishonim that believe that Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing over here. And Rabbi Yehuda is actually the Kula. And says that, v'chazra etzlo, adayin hi ne'ara. When she goes back to her father, she's still like a ne'ara. Still like a ne'ara means that the father still has auspices over her. He argues on the Tanakhama who says that once she is married to Tumah B'chayav, she's out of the picture. Rabbi Yehuda introduces the possibility that if she is still a Nara, when that marriage is terminated, that she would go back to the auspices of her father, at least if she started out in the marriage as a Ketana, that maybe she would still go back to her father's auspices. In that case, Rabbi Yehuda would be arguing on the Tanakhama in that case. And the third possibility is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying something that, like we said before, which is the Chumrah, that she is severed the relationship from the father, even in this instance, But that the Tanakhama disagrees with that, and Rabbi Yehuda is coming to disagree with the Tanakhama. So the three different ways you can explain the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. The most likely explanation is that he's being Mosif on the Tanakhama, and that's the way the Ram learns it, because of the Yerushalmi. So it says that fundamentally Rabbi Yehuda doesn't disagree with the Chachamim, and if that's the case, then Rabbi Yehuda is basically expanding what the Chachamim said. So now the Gemara says, "I'm Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Zo Divrei Rabbi Yehuda." That is the authorship or the attribution of our Mishnah is to Rabbi Yehuda. Avachachamim omrim shalosh narot nidreim kayamim. There's only really three categories. They are bugeret, yitoma, vitoma b'chayav. Those are the only three categories. As we showed in the Mishnah, that's truly only the three issues that come up in the Mishnah. And as the Ran quoted the Yerushalmi, that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't fundamentally disagree with that. He just expands the cases to include all different types of scenarios, every manifestation or iteration. And he's not disagreeing fundamentally with the Chachamim. And then it would make sense that the explanation of Rabbi Yehuda's position in the Mishnah is an expansion of the Tanakhama's position, not necessarily disagreeing with the Tanakhama. Okay, next Mishnah. Konam she'eni ne'ane la'aba u'la'avicha. Takes a nether that she will not get any anah from her father, your father. Imani osal picha. If I do anything for you. So that's one nether she takes. She'eni ne'anit l'cha, imosani al-pi'ava ba-pi'avicha. If I listen to my father, or I listen to your father, then I will not provide you any more hana. I won't be able to do anything for you. Harzeh yafer. He's allowed to be mefer the nedarim in this case. Now, there is a machloket about the girsa here. Most of the Rishonim think that the girsa of our Mishnah is correct, and that means that he has a right of hafara in both of these instances. Both in the first instance and in the second instance. And what the Ran terms here is, the Mishnah is lo zu af zu ktani. Not only this, but also this. So that there's a chiddush in each part of the Mishnah. And that chiddush is what the Mishnah is after to show you that the husband still has the right of hafara. On the other hand, the Rebbe Lezer Mitz had a different gears in the Mishnah, where the first case in the Mishnah says lo yafer. He doesn't have a right of hafara. In the second case of the Mishnah, he does have a right of hafara. Because in the first case in the Mishnah, it says, Konam she'eni ne'ane la'abo la'vicha, imani yoseh al-picha. The neder is tied to her doing something for her husband. So let her do something for her husband. And if she does it for her husband, then she can't get hana from his father or her father. If that's the case, so be it. Let that be the case. And he can't be made for the neder, because as long as she's providing him with the hana'ah, there's no violation of beino the beina. And since there's no violation, he can't be made for the neder. Well, then in the second case, where she says, she'eni ne'ed l'cha, imosani al-pi'aba val-pi'avicha, where she says that, I will not do anything for you if I listen to my father, or I listen to your father, then in that case he can be made for the neder, because there, the nether itself involves beino de beina, which is that the trigger is not the hana that she provides him, but rather the nether itself is the hana that she provides him. In that case, it's a nether of beino de beina, even though the trigger is not beino de beina. So that's why Harei Zeh Yafer. He has the ability to be made for the nether in that instance. That's the way the Rabbi Lezer Mitz writes it. On the other hand, the Ran over here says that there is a lo zu av zu ktani b'mishnah, and this is the Chiddush. One is, the itan a resha b'lochud, had you only had the resha, salka dat chamina de mishumachi yachol afer. Why can you do the afara? Mishum. De mihashta mitasra. At this moment, something is effective immediately. Which is, iba anatavia, mishum nidra. Either she can't get anah from her father, because that will trigger, getting anah will trigger her inability then to give anah to her husband. Oh, iba masha tasilafiv, mishum tna. Or, if she is triggered by the tznai, then she can't do something for the husband. So in that case, immediately effective is something. What's immediately effective? Either I can't get hana from my father or from your father, or she can't provide hana to her husband. One of those three things has to happen right away. Because either she triggers the neder by giving hana to her husband, and now she's restricting getting hana from the father. Or she resists giving hana to her husband in order to get hana from her father. But that means one of the two sides, whether it's the trigger or the nether itself, is effective immediately. And that's why he has a right of hafara, because there's something that goes into effect right now. For that reason, it's called chala neder. The neder is effective. And since the neder is effective, he has a right of hafara. Because in that instance, it's considered to be beino lebeina, then he has the right of hafara. Now, even though we had a Mishnah early on, if you remember, we had a Mishnah early on that said that if she says, takes a neder that I won't get on, or I won't provide for your father, I won't provide for my father, that he didn't have a right of hafara in that case, because that was not considered to be beino lebeina. So why over here is it considered to be something that's beino lebeina? That's obviously what bothered the Rebbe Lezer Mimitz. And that's why the Rebbe Lezer Mimitz said the first case is lo yafer. So the Tosfot explains why this is different than that case before. Venira de shapir havi dvarim shebeino lebeina. Disagrees with Rebbe Lezer Mimitz and says that this is a case of beino lebeina. Kevin shayidei shetaseh lefi ba'ala. Because if she provides hana to her husband, then she's now restricted from getting hana from the father or the father-in-law. Then she causes a bad name for her husband amongst the neighbors. Because either, depending on how you read the Mishnah, whether she's not allowed to provide hana to the father or the father-in-law, or the father-in-law and father can't provide her hana, that's going to create a strain in the relationship that's going to give her a bad name amongst neighbors. And therefore becomes an issue of beino lebeina. Velo domi. And that's not similar to the case before. L'she'eni oseh l'pi abba u'l'fi avicha, where she says that I won't do what your father says or what my father says. D'mar le'el d'eino yochol afer. We saw in the Mishnah early on that you're not allowed to be made for there. Kevin shasrat zman me'eleha. There where she made the Isser just about that issue. D'lo talta neder b'asiyata. She didn't connect it to her doing the fi'a ba'al. According to the ba'al, then there's no beino lebeina. So here, the beino lebeina is because she connects it to her giving hana to the husband. And connecting it to the hana that she gives to the husband, therefore becomes an issue of beino lebeina. But in a case where she just says it straight out, that I'm not going to get hana, there the husband doesn't get beino lebeina, even though it might cause him a bad name amongst the neighbors, because there's no direct connection between the ba'al and the wife's neder. That's what this condition does over here. It makes it that it's beino lebeina. Right now, what's the chiddush in the second case? The chiddush in the second case of the Mishnah is that it wasn't chal yet, the neder. The neder was yet to go effective. Because she says here, she'eni ne'eneid lecha, I will not give you ana, ima ani oseh al pi abba v'al pi avicha. If I do based on what your father says or based on what my father-in-law says. So over there, it's not automatic that the neder goes into effect, or it's not immediately effective. Only once she listens to the father or the father-in-law will that trigger the neder and then go into effect. Since that's a, what we call a delayed trigger, it's not automatic. As opposed to the first case of the Mishnah where somebody she cannot provide hana to or get hana from is immediate. Because either way, she's either going to trigger the neder or she has to avoid triggering the neder. In the second case, there's a point in time where if she doesn't have to listen to the father or the father-in-law, or they don't tell her to do anything, there's a period of time in which there will be no strain in the neder or in the trigger. And so because of that, you would have thought that you cannot be made for the neder until it goes into effect. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah, that you can be made for the neder even prior to going into effect, which is actually a machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Natan, which we're going to see in the Gemara now. The Rabbi Natan believes you can only be made for a neder once it's effective, and the Chachamim believe you can even be made for the neder where it will go effective. And the Ran already qualified that earlier in the Masechta, where he said that that's only true where it's inevitable that it'll go effective. And this is a case where it's inevitable it'll go effective because there's no way she can be careful not to listen to her father or father-in-law. The Ran says back on Pei Amud Aleph, V'yesh lomar, deino chanam, detanet ematitin gerabonan sfirlei, v'miu ki amri rabonan demayfer, af kvish lo chala neder, halami heicha shi yef shar lalihi natzel. It's only a case where she cannot get out of the neder. It's inevitable that it will happen. Perish kimis darab etnaam inui nefesh umetavrim shebeino lebeina. That the keeping of the tnai will precipitate a problem of beino lebeina or precipitate a problem of inui nefesh. So there, by definition, the nether is going to chal, and that's why the Rechamim say it. But where she connects the nether b'davar shelo inui nefesh and not beino lebeina, duosh efshar la lamod bo kirechitza, it's something that she could withstand or hold up to, then you would not have a right to hafara until it goes into effect, till the neder goes into effect. Now, bikasha, what about the case that you asked about, which is, but come on, ish shamra reni nizira lisha etgaresh, when I get divorced, So in that case, it's not inevitable. Maybe she won't get divorced. So then, according to the way Ran has explained the Chachamim, you should not have a right to be made for the neder until it goes into effect, because it's not inevitable that it will go into effect. Yet Rabbi Akiva over there says, you're fair. But we saw that in the... Right, the Rabbi Akiva says you can be made fair in that case. Why? So he answered, and this is what we spoke about at that time, because in that case, it may not be inevitable, but it's out of her control. And since it's out of her control, therefore it's deemed as if the neder will become effective or could trigger the inui nefesh. The only time that we say that you don't have a right to be made for the neder until it goes into effect is where she is the party in control of whether the neder will become effective, and she has the ability to stop it because it's a reasonable condition that she can live up to. So in that case, you cannot be made fair preemptively before it goes into effect. In any other case, the Chachamim believe that you can preemptively be made fair the neder, and that's the answer, or the Ran speaks about back on Pei Amud Aleph, exactly these scenarios, and now how to explain it here. Right, that's what the Ran says over here, that Kamash Malan came into Talta to Na'ah, but Devashi Asuila Boralav. Since she put her tonight in something that she's definitely going to violate, listening to her father or her father-in-law, that by definition makes it inevitable that the nether is going to go to an effect, and that's why he has a right to be made fair, at least according to the Chachamim, even though the nether is yet to be chal. There is a third explanation of the Mishnah, and that is the explanation of the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot. That the Rambam says that the case here is a case of an Aram Ruasa, where both the father and the husband have auspices over the daughter. And the Rambam explains that the lishonot of the neder here is that the woman is saying, I won't listen to you. And oseani al abo al avicha is, I won't listen to your father or your father-in-law. And the chiddush in the Mishnah is that by definition, the hafara will generate, necessitate her to listen to one of them. Because the hafara will grant her the right to nullify or not to hold of the neder. But in that instance, that listening in it itself is what she restricted in herself. In the hafara itself is a violation of the neder. And that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that you're allowed to be mayfair such a neder. And that the right of hafara still exists, even though she has to listen to one of them in order to generate the hafara. Alright, so now the Gemara says, Tanya, she'ini ne'enita abo ulo avicha, that I will not get hana from your father, from my father, whether it's shani ne'enita abo, I will not give them hana, ima ne'osila picha, if I do anything for you. Rabbi Natan Omer, lo yafer, don't do hafara. Chamei Omerim, yafer, you're allowed to do hafara. Yutula ani min yudim, im isham shatech. I will be restricted from having relations with any Jew if I have relations with you. Rabbi Natan Omer, lo yafer, he cannot do hafara. Chamei Omerim, yafer. Chamei say that he can do hafara. So now, the difference between the machloket revolves around whether the neder has to be chal, has to be effective in order to do hafara. The Chachamim say in both these cases, it's inevitable that the neder is going to be triggered, or that the tznai, the condition of the neder, involves an issue of bein olah beinah or inyan nefesh, and therefore the husband has the right of hafara immediately. Rabbi Natan says, no, let her trigger the neder. Let her have bi'ah with her husband, and then when she has bi'ah with the husband, she'll trigger the neder, which says, now I'm usur and getting bi'ah with all Jews, including her husband. And then the husband can be made for the neder because the neder is effective and it affects him. So he can be made for the neder. Right. That you would have to have the chaluta neder on the day that he hears about the neder. Otherwise, it's not called Yom Shamo. Right. Rabbi Natan now has a problem, which is when you say that you can only be made for the neder by the time of the chaluta neder, then Yom Shamo, it only will be relevant when that is on the day that the chaluta neder becomes effective. But what he says is until she has bi'ah with her husband, then we do not allow him to be made for the neder. Same thing with the case of the Isra Hana'ah. Let her get Hana'ah from the father or the father-in-law, give them Hana'ah. And then she'll trigger the neder, which says she cannot give Hana'ah to her husband. And then that'll be Beno Beinah, and it can be made for the neder. Only once it goes effective. But let her trigger it, and then it'll become effective. So that's the position of Rabbi Natan. Now we have a sidebar of a story which takes us a little way, which it says, How Gavra, the Itzar Hana'ayata, the Alma Alei. He restricted getting benefit from anyone or anything in the world. If I get married prior to learning. Now the way that the Tosafot here says that he was osuret until he finished Shas. Until he finished Shas Mishnayot. He wanted to learn beforehand, as the Ran brings over here. the Gemara in Kiddushin has a machloket as whether it's better to get married and then learn or learn and then get married. And according to the opinion that says it's better to learn and then get married is, if he gets married, Rechayim Mitzavaro, V'yasok B'Torah, if he has a millstone around his neck, which is he has to provide for his wife, he has to take care of his wife, how is he going to learn Torah? He's burdened by other obligations. So here, he wanted to make sure that he learned before he got married. So he structured the neder in such a way that says, if I get married prior to learning, then I'm asur b'ana from anybody in the world, which would basically make it impossible for him to live at that point in time. So essentially he's saying is, I'm going to learn before I get married. Right? B'gapa b'tovaya lo imse l'midna. He ran. Now here there are different interpretations. Rashi says gapa is a sulam, and tovaya is a chevel, is a rope. Or the way the Ram brings it down is a gapa tovaya is maklo v'tarmilo, is his staff and his pouch. V'lo imse l'midna, and he was not successful at learning. There are two possibilities of why he was not successful at learning. Either he just wasn't good at learning. He wasn't able to remember. He wasn't able to be successful at learning Mishnayot. He wasn't made out. He wasn't cut out for learning. And it didn't work out. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is, and it goes more along the lines of the way Rashi interpreted before, which was it was a ladder and a rope. He was too busy at work. And he never got free time to learn. And so since he was so involved or preoccupied with his occupation, therefore, he didn't have time to learn. And he didn't learn because of that. Now he comes and goes ahead, Atar Avacha Bar Rav Huna, Vishavshe. Avacha Bar Rav Huna comes along and basically misleads him. V'insiv itita. And caused him to get married. Obviously, the individual now wanted to be matir the nether so that he could get married. But Rav Acha Bar Rav Huna did not want to be matir the nether. Why? Because the nether was not effective yet. And he was seemingly choshesh for the shita of Rabbi Natan. So in order to be matir the neder, what he wanted to do was force it to go into effect. So what he did was he misled him and told him, if you get married, everything will be fine. The guy gets married, and then now he's stuck. Visharke tina. And either he's tachpana betit, kidei shelo yikeru Rav Chista. He covered his face in cement so Rav Chista would not recognize him. That's why the Rashi Mefaresh says over here. Because it seems like Rav Chista would have been upset at him, that he was getting married before learning, or he wouldn't have been matir the neder. So he disguises himself to go get hatarat ha-neder. The way that the Ran explains it is, v'sharkei betina is, k'dei la-roto shum tzarich le-briyot, la-alto lichbos b'gadav. Because if now he's asur b'ana for everyone, he immediately needs help. Because now he has this dirt all over him, and nobody can launder his clothing or take care of him because he's asur b'ana. Or, the way the Rosh explains it is now he's stuck. Ki, hifshit bigadav. He stripped himself of clothing. He's not allowed to get benefit from anything in the world. He put plaster on him so that he wouldn't be naked when he became before Rav Chista. So these are all different versions of what happened over here. Whatever it is, he brings it before Rav Chista. Vacha the kamei to Rav Chista to be matir the neder. Omer Rova, Rova comments about this. Man chakim lemevad kia milta, ilav de ravacha bar ravuna de gavar abuhu. Who is so smart, so wise, like ravacha bar ravuna, that brought us to this predicament, or got it to the situation where the nether was chal? Basically, he was able to get it to the point where the hatarat the nether will take place after the nether was effective. So that's what he was cunning in that way, that he got the guy to get married, so that the hatarat the nether could go into effect. The kasavar, he must believe that he hechi de polig rabbanu Rabbi Natan b'hafara, ochadami pligi b'sheila. What Rav Acha Rav Huna must believe is that just like the Chachamim and Rabbi Natan argue b'hafarat the nether and the nullification of the nether, whether it has to be effective or not, so too they argue by hatarat the nether of the Chacham, whether it has to be effective or not. Rapapi amar, Rapapi says, machloket b'hafara, that the machloket is only b'hafara, the Rabbi Natan savar, in a baal mefer, elim tein chala neder. In that instance, the husband can only be made for the neder if it goes into effect. Dichtiv, v'chafra ha-levana, u'bosha ha-chama, it's a pasuk that's found in Yishayahu. And over there, the word chafra is like the word hefer. And over here, it's like chafra ha-levana, something that already exists, the moon that exists, will be embarrassed or shamed by the light that is brought out. The Pasuk in Yishayahu says that the moon will be as light as the sun, and the sun will be multiples of what it is today, nevertheless, they'll be embarrassed by the light of Hashem, of the presence of Hashem. And that is the second interpretation that Rashi brings down, which is, why is the chavra levana bosha chama? Kidiktiv, ayahu levana kora chama, bora chama yue shabbatayim. Da'ishata chavra nahura de levana. At that moment, the light of the moon will be irrelevant. Da'ad asha ki malach Hashem tzvokot al Yisrael. That's because Hashem now is the king over Israel. And that's what the pasuk says. V'charav levana b'shach chama ki malach Hashem tzvokot b'aretz Zion b'Yerushalayim neged zaken av kavod. Below kodem shimloch. But not prior to Hashem becoming the king. V'hu adin gami neder. That only once it goes effective are you able to be made fair the neder. So just like the moon will only be embarrassed when Hashem is the sole ruler, so too the neder can only be made fair when it's in effect. Rashi then brings another interpretation, which is that halivana is actually a conjugation or contraction of the words chal bama or chal bana, that is a neder. That when can you be made fair? That is when there is a building or when you've created a bama. And this is Rabbi Natan Lashitato, who said earlier in the Masechta that someone who takes a neder is kiilu bana bama. If he keeps it, it's as if he's makrivalav. And that's what it means here. V'chafra is only once the bama is built, only once the neder goes effective. And that's the other interpretation that Rashi brings over here. But then Tosafot quotes Rabbi Elazar Mimitz, and the Rosh says something similar. Lo yadati l'faresh heichi mashmalei mehocha. I don't know what the source is from here. Denira the simano ba'alma naktei ashas. That the Shas brought this down simply as an indication, but it's not a real limud. That chafra, bina, binyana, or bana, when the building is built, meaning that only once the nether is effective, again, it's not a real limud, but simply a simana ba'alma. And the real reason is a svara, that memakom sheni sura, why shouldn't you be able to be made for the nether? The chafrata nether should only take place once the isur is in effect. On the other hand, there are other girsaot that bring down that the reason behind Rabbi Natan is v'afer nidra asher aleha, that he's allowed to nullify the nidrim that are on her. I mean, honor means achar shichol aleha neder yifirenu, that he can only be made for it once the neder takes effect. So that's another alternate way to explain the shita of Rabbi Natan. Again, three different ways to look at v'chafra levana. Either the word hafra is instead of the word hefer and levana is something that exists already. Or, according to Rashi, chafra halivana is chal bina, that it may fare that which is built, the bama, or the binyan that is there. According to Lezer Mimitz, it's just simana ba'alma. Just like over there, chafra is only once the thing is in place. So too, the nether is only in place, it's not a real limud. Or, we have this alternate girsa that brings the pasuk from Parshat Nidarim, that says that he's only made for the nether, v'nidra, sh'ala, only once the nether is on her, does he have the right of hafara. Rabbanan savre baal mefer alfo pishlo chala neder dichtiv mefer machshavot arumim, that Hashem annuls the thoughts of those that are naked, but meaning those that are planning evil. Hashem already nullifies those planners of evil, but you see that hafara is even before it goes into effect, even when it's still in the planning stages. Aval b'sheila, when it comes to sheila divrei akol. Where everybody agrees that the neder has to be in effect for the chacham to be matir the neder dichtiv, because it says, lo yachel divaro, that he's not allowed to profane his word, divaro. From there we learn out, he may not profane his word, but acherim mechilim divaro. Others are able to profane his word, but there it's talking about divaro. That's only when his divar is in effect. That's only when there is something to profane. If there's nothing to profane, then there's nothing to be matir. And so the hatara is connected to his profaning the nether if he did not get a hatara. And that's only true when the nether has gone effective. All right, we're going to stop here. 11 lines down on Tzadi Amud Aleph. The Gemara will bring a third opinion that the machloket is only by hafara. But by sheila, divrei akol, you're allowed to be matir, even though the nether did not go into effect. And then the Ron here discusses the halachic ramifications of that, that since Rava here seemingly praises Rav Acha bar Rav Huna, that you would think the halacha is that way. And the Ron says it's not the case because It might be that Rav Acha bar Rav Huna was not doing it because he thought it was halakhically right. He was just choshesh for the sheet of Rabbi Natan, but not necessarily that he paskin that way. And same with Rava. Rava might have liked what he did because he was choshesh for the sheet of Rabbi Natan, but that doesn't mean necessarily that we paskin like Rabbi Natan, or that we paskin that Hatarat HaNeder requires the Chalut HaNeder. And therefore, the Ran says over here that in an aloha kaimelon derabonon, we pass like derabonon and not like Rabbi Natan. And the Ran goes as far as to say that maybe even Rava doesn't disagree with Rav Papi. All he's saying is that minimum what we could learn from Rav Acha bar Rav Huna is that he's choshesh l'shita Rabbi Natan, and he's choshesh l'shita Rabbi Natan even by Sheila, even by Hatarat HaNeder. But that's not to say that Rava himself may not hold like Rav Papi, that when it comes to Hatarat HaNeder, he thinks that everybody agrees that you need it. He just couldn't prove it from the case of Rav Acha bar Rav Huna. And therefore, the Ran who says or thinks that Rav Papi is the halacha believes that Rava doesn't necessarily disagree with Rav Papi, but Rava was just addressing the case of Rav Acha bar Rav Huna and what you could prove from that case. And at most, you can prove in that is that he was choshesh the sheet of Rabbi Natan, both by Hafara and by Hatara. But you can't prove from there that even the Chachamim agree by Hatara.